Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, and Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Found a fascinating article on the web, as usual. It comes from Huffington Post. It's entitled, The Foreign Policy Blueprint Hillary Shouldn't Follow. So that sort of caught my attention, and this is coming from, you know, a liberal source, and I thought, well, maybe they're just going to talk about a Republican platform, but it's not quite that way. They're talking about a presentation by the Center for a New American Security, which is an organization that's been around since 2007. And they get into foreign policy deeply. The two founders, Michel Flournoy and Kurt Campbell, were the founders. And one is described as a Democratic hawk and a Republican neocon. So I wonder if they could have something in common. But they've been around. They spend a little bit of money. Who do you think their sponsors are?
Well, Dr. Paul, I know this is going to shock you, but this is the Democratic version of PNAC, the Bill Kristol Group. And we have a graphic here of who sponsors their conferences. And this gives a lot of gives us a lot of insight as to how foreign policy works in Washington. All of these, I would hazard a guess, are involved in the military industrial complex in one way or the other. Some directly, Boeing, Raytheon, DynCorp, General Dynamics, L3. These are the Beltway bandits. These are the people who make trillions of dollars on war. And this is an example of how you make a lot of money in Washington. Center for New American Security had a $6 million revenue last year in 2014. That's how much money this little think tank raised. But what they delivered to Hillary is a plan to spend $1 trillion extra dollars on the military over the next 10 years. So they give $6 million, and over 10 years, they'll get a $1 trillion return. That's a great investment.
It sounds like we're talking about a member of the deep state right now, and this group certainly is. But you know, the $1 trillion, big deal. Which politician do we have running for the presidency right now, or that has been running, that wasn't in favor of this? I have a relative that was running, and he was not in favor of it. But who really is opposed to rebuilding the military? I mean, it seems like the deep state has their finger in all this and in the fingers of all these politicians. So it looks like this will be, you know, acceptable. But it's interesting to me that we haven't read too much objection to this. But here it comes from a progressive magazine pointing out, of course, something interesting to us, that there's a Democratic hawk behind this and there's a Republican neocon behind this. And to me, the first thing I think of is, you know, the people want coalitions. We want you to work together. And sure enough, Republicans and Democrats support this kind of business. And the votes are that way, too. It's always a contest who can be the most hawkish, who can be the toughest, who can spend the most money. And in spite of the economic mess we're in and the deficit that we have, it seems like these coalitions like this have tremendous power and influence.
And this really explains the deep, sick corruption of Washington, D.C. Because you have the power brokers, the Kagan family, Michel Flournoy, Bill Kristol, and these people, they deliver the military-industrial complex trillions of dollars, and in turn, they continue to be referred to as the experts, the power brokers around Washington. A lot of what this new document is sort of a resume to Hillary Clinton. We're the people who want to be the head of your Pentagon. Flournoy has been floated as a possible Secretary of Defense. Victoria Nuland, who is the wife of Robert Kagan, who's part of this, she is the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe. She's the brain behind the Ukraine fiasco. She's expected to be the Secretary of State. These people are just going to simply move in to the next administration.
You know, when it comes to foreign policy, a good term is incestuous. Yeah. You know, it's all a mixture. It has nothing to do with partisanship. It has nothing to do with Republican and Democrats. And that's why I get so disgusted with the grand debates and who's going to be president, because one is going to do this and the other is going to do that. But the thing of here is they're talking about, they're rather blunt about the policy per se, and they're promoting it. They emphasize the fact that we're an indispensable nation, that we're exceptional. Oh, why should you criticize that? Aren't we? Are you un-American?
Yeah,
but we know what they're talking about. The main thing is, and they put it in here, it's to promote and project American power. Nobody else will do it. The Europeans won't spend their money, so it's our obligation to do this, never questioning, you know, the outcomes. First, the economic outcome, and also the total failure of what they're doing. These are the people who have been promoting everything since 9/11, you know, pushing us into all these wars.
And these are the people, what they do to push this is, as you've alluded to, they really, the first casualty is the English language when the neocons start talking, because they wrap it up in very nice sounding words. The need for, quote, American leadership to enforce a rules-based international order. All of these fancy terms, but what they mean in reality is a ramped up military to send military forces everywhere overseas, open up new fronts, pivot to Asia, pivot to Europe, pivot everywhere. That's what it means in reality, but they wrap it in this nice sounding language.
Well, the few Republican hawks that I've read recently on this, they're all for this, even plus more. But it's interesting to note that Obama has actually picked somebody like Flournoy was in his administration. So he's not bashful, and we think of him as maybe a little bit more reserved since he won the Peace Prize, you know. But he's the same way. It just looks like his appearance may be different. But, you know, the other thing that bothers me politically is that the impression that so many people around the country and around and the voters, especially in the Democratic Party, who may be more progressive, of course, they're sort of expressing themselves with Sanders. They don't realize, you know, how strong the neoconservative foreign policy is in the Democratic Party. So, but we have to give Sanders a little bit of credit.
Yeah.
He has not endorsed what they're asking for now. He's been hesitant. He's not flat out endorsing this program.
Well, I mean, I think Hillary represents the total destruction of the idea of the progressive in the Democratic Party, because on the one hand, she's beholden to Wall Street, she's beholden to Goldman Sachs and all of these banks that have given her, you know, millions and millions of dollars. And then on the foreign policy front, she's beholden to the military-industrial complex and war. So how can you stand behind her and, you know?
Well, that's one half of the problem that the country's facing today, all the bickering going on, because people are disgusted with the Republicans. They're supposed to be fiscal conservatives and limit government and shrink government, get rid of the Department of Education and all these things. And they certainly don't claim they want to be the policeman of the world. Matter of fact, Bush won by saying we shouldn't be the policeman of the world. But the spending goes on. So the Republican, the base, gets disgusted with the party itself, and the Democrat base gets disgusted. And I think the fact that we're running out of money has a lot to do with this, too, because there will be limits and there's going to be a lot more bickering. I think the bickering and the chaos is just beginning, because regardless of who wins the presidency, they're not going to, no matter what they say, they're not going to cancel out the inevitable corrections that must come, because the correction in the economy has always been, it gets set in prior, you know, dislocation of credit and excessive credit and low interest rate. So that's all locked in. It's just a matter of what will be the precipitation of it. So regardless of which person gets the presidency in January, you know, maybe even by then there may be more chaos. Foreign policy-wise, there has to be some places there that are exploding, and there's articles out now about why aren't people challenging the foreign policy? And you can go down a list of,
yeah,
of where we've run into problems, and this is endorsing more of it.
You're absolutely right, because if you look, there's a quote in the Huffington Post article from the report from the Center for a New American Security. And it sounds like their problem is that Obama is way too restrained. If I can just read this couple of sentences. This is from the report. U.S. interests require the American military to be deployed globally rather than generally concentrated in one region like Russia or China. The adversary's job is easier than the U.S. task of projecting military power a half world away.
Yeah,
so we've got to be everywhere. All the time.
Yep, and that is their theory, and they just ignore failure. But I always make the same analogy in economics. you know, that we have a real mess, but we've been following Keynesian economics, interventionist economic policy, and it's a very, very precarious economic system. We have had, you know, the NASDAQ bubble collapse, with housing bubble collapse, and we've been in the doldrums for 8 years now. But they never say, well, maybe we're going in the wrong direction. You know, I always like the political question. They ask when they do these polling, are we going in the right direction or wrong direction? Well, probably 90% of the American people say we're in the wrong direction. But nobody said, well, I know what's happening. We're going this way. We need to go this way. And this is the answer. You never hear the answer in a different direction. You hear the carping and the blame and the coalition building. But it's still the thing that you pointed out at the very beginning. How many companies are behind, you know, the promotion of these foreign policy? And this is a coalition of Republicans and Democrats, neocons and radical Democrats, and they come together. And I have never, well, it's probably been mentioned, but I still think that the American people have to wake up to who controls things behind the scenes. No matter what the politicians say, there is a deep state. And you showed some names of individuals who participated. The deep state isn't a monolith. They don't have 12-member board and they get together and tell what's going to happen and have somebody from the medical industry and the insurance industry and the drug industry and the banking industry. No, they work pretty independently, but they also know what they're doing. And that is, we have to keep this system going because it's a good deal for us, and we certainly have to have the Federal Reserve because we can't fool the people, you know, without the Federal Reserve. And eventually, of course, that doesn't work.
Well, if you think about how this tentacles of the NGOs, of the think tanks in Washington, how well endowed they are, $6 million per year just for this one. And there are dozens of them around Washington. They're paid by the military-industrial complex. You know, compare this $6 million that they have on hand to promote war with something like the Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Our entire yearly budget would probably be a luncheon that they would have. They would just write that amount off. So all of the money goes to promoting war, and the people who say that it's making us weaker and more vulnerable and it's destroying the economy, you know, you make do with the pittance.
You know, and this is the reason we can agree with half of the statements made by the liberal left. Yeah. Because 1%, you know, is ripping us off. Of course, their answers are different. But we can agree this is part of the 1%.
Yeah.
You know, and they have enough money. You know, they're not doing poorly when they're buying houses. Their houses cost $1 million, $100 million. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's a huge bubble there. And they're controlling the money. They're controlling the spending. They're controlling the Congress. And this bubble gets bigger and bigger. Of course, the 99%, oh, yeah, we'll take care of them. Yeah, we're going to take care of them. Bernie says, whatever they want, we're going to give it to them free. You know, so he analyzes one part of it, okay, but then he comes up with this other silly stuff. But I don't hear any sound economic theories coming from the Republicans either. I mean, they're resorting to some old-fashioned ideas like protectionism and tariffs and things like that. That doesn't solve the problems of the economy that we're facing.
Yeah, and I think the military-industrial complex will be the last thing to go. They'll be planting the flag, you know, in the middle of D.C., and they'll be the last to leave.
And the danger there, of course, is that might mean the military is the last power that we have to contend with. And nobody thinks, and I don't think about it either, I don't think that tomorrow there's going to be a military takeover. But already there's a military takeover.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a fascist takeover because they are part of the government. They get the contracts, they get the money, and they get the control, and they can control Congress, and they support the candidates. And there's not going to be a radical change. There's some good people in Congress. There's a lot of good Americans that would like to see the rooting out of the system. But that is not going to happen. Most of the incumbents are going to be reelected, and the process is going to continue.
And what's most disgusting is that these creeps that are destroying our country, they wrap it all in the flag and deliver it to middle America, you know.
Yes, and there's no doubt that there's a taker for that because we want to think well of ourselves. And nobody wants to say that we're not an exceptional nation. And I think we can be an exceptional nation. But to believe that we're the only ones that have answers and that we should spread it through force, I think the best term for that is the whole idea of the French Revolution, how they forced it on the French and it didn't work. And that's what we're doing now around the world. It hasn't worked. And we have to deal with it in the issue of ideas. The ideas that have run this country, the progressive ideas, whether it's foreign policy or economic policy and monetary policy, it's failed, and we have to admit it, which means that we have to come up with something different. And that, of course, is what we're, you know, working hard to be in the business of, is trying to present the ideas. And the most simplest and precise way of defining that is non-intervention. Liberty is non-intervention. The government should stay out of our personal lives. The government should stay out of our wallet. The government should stay out of managing the economy. And it certainly should stay out of the internal affairs of all other nations. And with that, I truly believe that we will be the wealthiest and the safest nation in the world if we would follow those policies. Hopefully someday we'll see that come to our country. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.